It's time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Here's Carol Marks in conversation with HDS Greenway. He's one of America's greatest reporters. He's covered the wars in Vietnam, the Middle East, and the Balkans. And he's going to talk to Carol about his latest book titled Foreign Correspondent, published by Simon & Schuster.
Now, I've got to say that one of the most helpful things you do in your memoir is to look at some of the historical causes for the wars that have come about post-World War II and the Cold War. So what role did those arbitrary boundaries drawn up in peace treaties by former colonial powers have in the development of these horrific ethnic and religious civil wars that are now going on?
Well, so many of the boundaries of Europe and in the Middle East and indeed in Asia too were drawn by colonial powers when colonialism was thriving and going very well. But what I think, for my mind, one of the great struggles, even dwarfing the Cold War, was the anti-colonial struggle after World War II, where all these countries decided they didn't need Europeans to tell them what to do anymore and wanted to run their own countries. And often in those cases, the boundaries that had been set up didn't always coincide to where tribes lived and where different ethnic groups lived. So it made it much more difficult. Pakistan is a perfect example where the British colonialists drew the line, the so-called Durand Line, between Afghanistan and what's now Pakistan, then British India, which cut the Pashtun people in half. And some of them were in Afghanistan and some in Pakistan. And this Durand Line is now causing trouble for us today.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, before we get into some of the places that you spend a lot of time in, such as Vietnam, I wanted to ask you about the way that reporting in combat has just changed so dramatically all over the place, in the Far East, the Middle East, everywhere. And I guess it's all been due to the Internet and the 24-hour news cycle. And what do you think the effect has been?
Well, I think it's put, in the first place, it's put great strains on reporters. If you were working for a newspaper in Vietnam and you filed your story, well, that was it. You didn't have to worry about anything until the next day. But now every reporter, especially with the Internet, has to keep updating and updating and updating, and there's never any downtime, so to speak. They never can really relax. And I worry that this means that they have less time reporting the story because they always have to keep updating and updating. And I can't, it's just much, much harder on the reporters today than it was 40 years ago.
Oh, I believe that. I went on a recent trip when the president went to D-Day. And reporters today practically kill each other to get closer, you know, to the president, and they don't have much time to reflect on what's going on.
Well, maybe you could make a case that every advance in technology has had a cost in the time for reflection. Maybe it was better in the 19th century when you wrote your stories and sent them off on a steamship, and they wouldn't be published for a couple of weeks until they got to New York or London or wherever.
Yeah, that's a point. Now, let's talk about the amazing amount of time you spent in Vietnam. And you said that you realized that it was going to be the defining event of our generation. What made you come to that conclusion?
Well, it just seemed to me that this struggle that we had were getting ourselves into. You remember we first backed up the French after World War II when they wanted to return to Vietnam. Franklin Roosevelt didn't want that to happen, but Roosevelt was dead by the time the war ended, and the Truman administration thought that France was too important, that communism might even take over France, and that we should make a stand and help the French. And then we did help the French, but and they lost, and then we took over the war. So this was obviously a stand we were making, and I think it proved to be a disaster.
It certainly did. Now, you stayed in Vietnam. You were almost there for the better part of 8 years till the final day when you were evacuated off that roof of the U.S. Embassy. What was that chaos like, and how did the, being in the Vietnam War for so long, how has that colored the way you feel about the other conflicts that you've covered?
Well, the chaos was incredible and terribly sad, and people pressing against the embassy wire and trying to pass notes and saying, I help the Americans, please save me, please save me. And there we were having to, with our embassy Marines having to beat them back, and here were people we had come to save from communism, and everything was collapsing. But I think that the before the fall of Saigon, all that winter, it's coming up to 40 years now. Next year will be the 40th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. But all that spring, we saw the South Vietnamese Army, which we had trained and equipped, and they had much more firepower than the North Vietnamese, but they simply collapsed. And, of course, when last summer the Iraqi army that we had trained and equipped and presumably had more firepower than the so-called ISIS, that and they collapsed. And it seemed to me here were two events almost 40 years apart for basically the same reason, that you can train an army. If you're a foreign country, you can train an army. You can equip it, but you can't motivate it. And you can't save it from the corrosive effect of corruption.
Absolutely, so, that's a big factor.
Well, I think it is a big factor, and the American taxpayer money was being taken away in suitcases to Bangkok from Vietnam by corrupt officials and officers, and it was going to Dubai from Baghdad the same way. And so it's very difficult and maybe beyond the reach of a foreign power to be able to motivate somebody else's army. That they have to do themselves.
You know, I agree with you, and it gets back to another factor, and that is that we have always underestimated what the power of the individual tribes are in a country and how the loyalty to that tribe is always more important than the loyalty to whoever is running the country. So you've got, you know, for instance, in Iraq, you've got the Sunnis and the Shiites, who certainly don't get along. And so it's hard to have an army that's really representing the people that live in that country.
Well, it is. And I think when we invaded Iraq, it was little understood or cared about in Washington, this great schism between Sunnis and Shia that's coming to haunt us today. But you remember Robert McNamara, one of the great architects of the Vietnam War. After the war, he said, well, you know, I never understood the culture and politics and what was really going on in Vietnam. And I didn't understand that nationalism really trumped communism. And, well, plenty of people tried to tell him, but that great conversion of Robert McNamara reminded me of David Petraeus when he came to take over the fighting in Afghanistan. Said, well, you know, we don't really understand the ethnic and tribal makeup of Afghanistan. So,
hey, that's the first thing that we need to understand, the cultural makeup of other countries, that whether we don't have to be fighting with them, but just trying to deal with them culturally, seeing what goes on.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that was lacking in our expeditionary forces when we sent them to Iraq and Afghanistan and before that Vietnam, that we neglected that aspect, which, as you say, is all important.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the civil war going on in Syria. We've got the radical Islamic group, ISIS, and they're bringing certainly further destabilization to the country. So, you know, you say that military intervention, other people's civil war, tends to make things worse. And I agree with you. Look at the past record. But is there anything that we can do to make the situation less dangerous?
Well, I certainly wish the president well, and this is all playing out now, so we don't have the 2020 hindsight that we now have on these other conflicts. But it does seem that this is a war of enduring contradictions. I mean, here we have allies in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf who helped arm ISIS in the first place, and we have allies with Turkey who fear the Kurds more than they do ISIS, and so it's a very shaky and contradictory alliance. And I think the only thing you can say that President Obama has not fallen into the trap which we fell into in Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan of trying to make over the country in America's image. And I think that has been a failure in everywhere we've tried it. We can lead by example. You can't put Western values in a country that really hasn't had them before.
That's H.D.S. Greenway in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Foreign Correspondent. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Carol Marx returns in conversation with a famous murder mystery novelist. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, here's Carol Marx, the host of our program, in conversation with M.L. Rowland. She was a member of a local search and rescue team for 12 years and is an avid political activist, naturalist, and environmentalist. She's going to talk to Carol about her second search and rescue murder mystery titled Murder Off the Beaten Path. It's published by Berkeley.
What inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I think my love of books. I was raised with books. We had a huge number in my in the house, and all of us were readers. And so I grew up with books. I grew up reading them. I think my older sister was writing stories in her brown spiral-bound composition notebooks, and I think that inspired me to write some stories of my own when I was young. I can remember writing some stories when I was in grade school. And then I let that go for a while and just lived my life. And then when I got the idea to write a book, I put together, I was a mystery lover, and so I put together the two things that I knew and loved, and that was mystery novels and search and rescue, because I happened to be doing search and rescue at that time.
And that's so important to write about something that you know about.
Yes.
And that's what makes your book so unique. Your main character in your search and rescue mission books is Gracie Kincaid.
Right.
Now, like you, she was a volunteer in search and rescue missions in the mountains of Southern California. So does she have any of your other characteristics?
Oh, well, let's see. I've actually been asked that quite a bit. I actually have a friend that calls me she calls me Gracie. Well, let's see. Gracie, I like to think of Gracie as sort of a magnification or amplification of myself. I take some characteristics of me and make them larger than life. Like, she's braver. She's way more physical than I was when I was on the team, but possibly because she's a little bit younger. But also she's a lot more socially inept than I am or was at that time. She doesn't like talking to people. She becomes tongue-tied and
handshake
when she has to deal with strangers. So again, that's sort of an amplification of my personality. I'm getting used to it, actually, now that I'm doing publicity for my books. But I used to really be somewhat nervous or shy when I was meeting somebody for the first time. And so I just took that trait and sort of blew it up, if you will, and put it into Gracie.
I want to ask you about the biggest challenge that you faced in writing your sequel, Murder Off the Beaten Path, because there are so many suspects in this book, who could have done the horrible deed.
Right.
So how did you keep track of them? Did you do it with a chart? And did you know from the beginning who the real villain was going to be?
I didn't know who it was going to be from the beginning. It's one of those things, I tend to work very circuitously. I work in big circles. I work back and forth a lot. I actually use note card or 3x5 note cards to keep track of my characters, and more it's more plot lines, because there are lots of little subplots that go on, and this I'm going to give myself a little bit of a plug, but my book 3, which is Murder on the Horizon, that comes out next summer, that's more of a purer form of writing, because that's all I was doing at the time earlier this year. I had 9 months to turn in the first draft, and so that one I actually took different colored 3x5 index cards and plotted the different storylines out all on my office floor. And so I laid them all out chronologically, but also by color, so that I could see where the holes were, where too much time had gone by, where I would address this subplot or that storyline, something like that. So I use the little 3x5 cards. I'm very visual. So that worked
well. You could always just stamp them, since they were on the floor, if you didn't like where it was going.
Yeah.
Just stamp it right out.
I couldn't let my dog walk in my office.
I guess that was true, too. So now I wanted to ask you about two of the other main characters that were possible romantic interests in your first book, Zero
Yep.
Degree Murder, Rob and Ralph, and they are in the plot of this one, too.
Yes.
And I've got to say that you do it so beautifully. reintroducing them, that you really don't have to read your first search and rescue mystery in order to enjoy your sequel to it. And you did it very well. Was that a little tricky?
It was a little tricky. The temptation is I already know what happened in book one, so you need to just let it, or I write it to flow into book two. But a lot of people, and these are standalone books, and so some people are going to pick up Murder off the Beaten Path before they read Zero Degree Murder. And so I didn't want them to say, well, who is this guy and who is this guy? So it's always necessary to give a little bit of a backstory and a little, even little teasers, if you will, so that people will say, ooh, that sounds pretty cool. I'm going to go back and I'm going to read Zero Degree Murder and see how Gracie met Rob Christian for the first time, or how, you know, how her relationship with Ralph was, and so you can see the progression from the first book to the second book in their relationship.
Now, I know that you're an active naturalist and environmentalist.
Yes, ma'am.
And were you able to incorporate your concerns in Murder Off the Beaten Path with having Gracie become really upset when she learns that the church-owned camp, someone who works for them, is letting the camp waste, which is some of which is toxic, just get buried, and it could leach into the lake where people swim?
Yeah, yes. I am an environmentalist, and I do believe in preserving our world, because actually one of my favorite quotes, and I don't know the quote off the top of my head, but paraphrasing Teddy Roosevelt, if we don't have our world, then really nothing else matters, because that's the most fundamental, most basic need, is to care for our world and our environment. I'm using it in a little bit of different sense, but yeah, and so that ties in Gracie, because Gracie is a nature lover. She loves to spend time outside. She's very aware of the natural surroundings and the beauty and the diversity and taking care of it and the need for us to take care of it. And so, yeah, that definitely comes in. It sort of comes into play in Zero Degree Murder, but it definitely comes into play in Murder Off the Beaten Path.
Author M. L. Rowland in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Murder Off the Beaten Path, A Search and Rescue Mystery, published by Berkeley. For more information, go to mlrowland.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we are joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who moments from now will be speaking with J.O. And I'm not saying initials. It's J.A.E. is the first name, and O, O-H, is his second name. He's a national Medicare expert, and he's a certified financial planner. And he and Richard are going to talk about a new book titled Maximizing Your Medicare, Understanding Medicare, Protecting Your Health, and Minimizing Costs, published by Create Space. Richard, this whole Medicare thing is complicated, isn't it?
Everything having to do with health care is complicated. You know, I don't want to get on a soapbox here, but those countries that have that single-payer thing where you just go in, they take care of it, it gets billed, done. And you know, you know, dealing with insurance companies, what they cover, what they don't cover, what's in network, what's out of network, Medicare Part A, B, C, D, all of that. The good thing is that J.O.'s book makes it much, much clearer And it's almost an essential if you're reaching Medicare age and you don't have coverage any other way.
Were you able to get some interesting, as they say, takeaways in the conversation that we're about to listen to?
Absolutely. And for myself, too, because I have to admit, I don't understand all the different ramifications of this stuff. And then you make decisions and you say, well, this decision makes sense now, but when I'm, you know, 15 years from now, will it make sense? And he explains that you have the ability to make changes, but in some cases, you know, you're going to pay a penalty if you do. So there's all sorts of very, very good advice coming from J.O. soon.
I know, you know, becoming 65 and, you know, obviously beyond, you enter into this whole new world of stuff you have to learn. And I was telling somebody the other day, because I recently passed that threshold, and I said to them, give me a break here. I'm new at being old. This is all, being old is very new to me. And it's true, isn't it? I mean, it's like there are people who are used to being old. They've been old a while. And then there are those who, what? Oh, I guess I'm old now. And one of the things I remember my my mother telling me and grandparents telling me is, I don't really feel old, and yet I am. And a lot of people have that phenomenon where there's nothing about the way you see yourself or you feel about yourself or your thinking that's old, but all of a sudden, the world treats you differently. We're going to take a break, and we're going to listen to your conversation with J.O., and then we'll pick it up after that with some final thoughts and more. Richard Neer is with us, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups that continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Time now for Richard Neer, as promised, to have a conversation with J.O. J.O., that's J-A-E, and the last name is capital O-H, is a national Medicare expert and certified financial planner. He's going to talk to Richard about his new book titled Maximizing Your Medicare, Understanding Medicare, Protecting Your Health, and Minimizing Costs. It's published by Create Space.
And, Jay, is it, once December 7th happens, is it too late? Do you have to wait an entire year, or are there exceptions where you can apply after that?
Excellent question, Richard, and thank you very much for this morning. After December 7th, if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, which is combines the health as well as prescription coverage, you do have a disenrollment period, which begins again on January 1st. And runs through February 15th, actually. And what happens during that period, you can return to original Medicare, which is Part A, Part B, and you will also have the right to select a Part D, which is the standalone prescription plan.
Now, there are a lot of people
Go ahead.
A lot of people are confused with A, B, D. Now, we know D about prescriptions, but what's A and what's B? What are the differences in terms of coverage?
I agree that many people are confused. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of how they work. Part A is called hospital. I would have actually preferred to call it facilities because it's not only hospital, but it is also skilled nursing care, otherwise known as nursing homes, as well as hospice, for example. It can also include home health care if specifically prescribed by a physician. Part B, which is the second line, that is called medical. I actually would have called it services. meaning, and that is what you would expect, meaning doctor's visits as well as the examinations, services, therapies you would receive outside of a hospital setting. That is Part B. It is confusing which is when you go to the doctor, which you're covered by, you know, on a time-by-time basis, on an appointment basis, for sure.
So Part A you automatically get and there's no payment involved, and Part D, B you actually have to opt into. Is that the case?
You've got it exactly right, which is that Part A has no premium as long as you've paid for 10 years of payroll tax. It is part of the payroll tax. So if you've paid for 40 quarters, then you would be qualifying on the first date of the month you turn 65. And I'll leave out the exceptions. They are mentioned in Maximize Your Medicare. The Part B, as you point out, you opt into. You can delay under certain circumstances depending on your employment situation. If you're an active employee, for example, at a large company, you can delay. For most others, that means that you can enroll and it begins, again, the first date of the month you turn 65. You rightly point out that there is a monthly premium. In 2014, that is 104.9, $104.90. For most, and that will be stable going into 2015, exactly the same.
Now, if you're working for a corporation or you're part of a union and you already have health insurance under their coverage, does it automatically switch over to Medicare, or do you continue your coverage with your employer as long as you're employed?
It's complicated. You're absolutely right. Just by the nature of your question, Richard, is that if you work for a large employer, that is 20 or more employees, then there's the possibility that you can delay if you're an active enrollee, in which case your health care coverage or health benefits as an active employee are primary. Then you can delay Part B, because remember that is the one that you can elect to opt in or opt out. It is under very, you can also actually delay Part A. But reality, practical reality, is most to choose not to because it comes without a premium. And if you work at a small employer, then the rules are entirely different. Then Medicare is a requirement. You cannot delay if you're working at a small employer.
So you enroll in Part A. You enroll in Part A even if you have that extra health coverage, but you don't necessarily use it. Is that what happens?
Yes, that is exactly right. And there are some fairly complicated coordination between the large employer coverage and Part A in that instance. You're absolutely right. But generally speaking, that is the recommended path. And people who work for large employers can refer to Maximize Your Medicare. You can also refer to your human resources department. The caveat being, of course, is that that is subject to human error, and you can imagine that, you know, I spend a fair amount of professional time in kind of making sure that people have been informed correctly even by their own employer.
Indeed, the corrections. Now, when you make these initial decisions, are they written in stone? In other words, if you say, well, you know what, I don't want Part B now, can you enroll in Part B later as circumstances change?
That is entirely possible, Richard. It's a good question because you may know that part of the book and one other avenue that I participate in is I'm one of five expert contributors nationwide on a website for consumers called MyMedicareAnswers.com. It is powered by Humana. They asked me to, as well as the other panelists, to answer consumer questions, and that is a very, very popular question. You can delay. The issue is that if you pass out your open enrollment window, your Medicare open enrollment window, then you have penalties, late enrollment penalties, and those penalties never expire ever. And that becomes the issue because it's 10% per 12-month period that you delay. So you can imagine if you delay for 3 years, you've never been ill. And then you say, well, I'm getting a little bit older and maybe I should now enroll in Part B, and you've delayed for 3 full years, you can imagine that it's not only the $104.90 or the premium of that year, but it's also a 30% a month penalty, and that penalty keeps going, and it has no end. so you can understand. As a financial planner, I generally tell people probably not a good idea to finesse that, just because the penalties can be so great that make it not worth it.
Mm. So even if you have coverage through your employer, your large employer, you should at 65 take Part B anyway, to avoid when you retire at 70 or whenever you do retire that your premiums will go up 10% a year. So you should do it now. Is that what you're advising?
No, not exactly. What I'm saying is, if you work for a large employer, you have every right to delay. And then when you retire at a large employer, you can then sign up for Part B, no penalty. What I was referring to was those people who just decide when they turn 65 and are not working for a large employer, they delay.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay, right. The ones that are covered by large employers in your scenario, they can absolutely delay and be covered without penalty, and then when they retire, they can then elect to enroll in Part B without penalty.
Now, as you can imagine, this is the political season, and there are ads running all over the place and charges back and forth on both sides.
Right.
Some saying that the Affordable Care Act will impact your Medicare. If you can, and I know it's very complicated, if you give us a quick study on that one.
It's a good question. It's one that I actually try to – I've delivered, you know, presentations about Medicare in a number of avenues, including college, you can understand, lifelong learning institute type scenarios. I try to cut this off by simply saying that there are 53 million people in the United States with that red, white, and blue card, and 10,000 people a day turn 65. That is the demographic reality. And that is the dominating factor. Yes, you're absolutely right. We're in political season as well, and you'll hear charges on both sides of the aisle. But it's just a very, very complicated situation, but driven to, and this is my opinion, which is that you can't get around those two numbers, 53 million people plus 10,000 people a day. The size of the issue that needs to be addressed is enormous. And that explains a lot of why the choices seem complicated, the rules seem complicated, the jargon seems complicated. Just the size and scope of the number of people being served under Medicare is enormous.
So with this baby boom and this bulge in the snake's belly, Medicare is going to have to be reformed at some point, either age restrictions or higher premiums or something down the road at some point in order to stay solvent?
It's not my opinion, Richard, today. I wouldn't make that statement. And the reason I say that is based on a couple of just simple realities. Number one is that the voting block alone is also larger. So we could, you know, discuss reforms or fundamental changes, but reality is just the way that it works, meaning you prepay for Part A using your income tax and then you enroll in Part B secondarily. Just moving those two line items in the fundamental structure would be very, very difficult. And the second thing is, this is, along with Social Security, one of those cornerstones. And the rulemaker, i.e. the government, has the unrestricted right to change the rules. Reality is that I find it very difficult to believe any time I hear naysayers say that, you know, Medicare is going to implode, Social Security is going to implode. Those kinds of things to me are largely, you know, vehicles and trying to strategy that people try to use to be elected or not.
That's J-O-J-A-E, capital O-H, in conversation with Richard Neer, and his book is titled Maximizing Your Medicare, Understanding Medicare, Protecting Your Health, and Minimizing Costs. It's published by Create Space, and if you'd like some more information, go to MaximizeYourMedicare.com. It's MaximizeYourMedicare.com. Super Job by Richard Neer. And speaking of Richard Neer, as promised, Richard Neer will be joining us for the final segment of our big two-hour get-together in just a moment. We'll be talking about how technology and the 24/7 work and life cycle, the information that we're drowning in, is making all of us slightly crazy, certainly stressed out, you're not alone. That's next. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And joining us for this final segment of our big two-hour get-together is Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. And, Richard, the holiday season is upon us. People are rushing here and there. We just finished the Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you noticed, but it seems to me that people took off from work a lot earlier, either mentally or physically, than they normally do this past four-day holiday. And I'm finding that this past week that's gone by since then, they haven't been that quick to want to get back into the groove. And now with Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's and all the other holidays coming up, I got a feeling nothing's going to get done till the new year. You know why? Because most people are so damn busy, they can't take care of whatever it is they have to do. Crazy times.
Well, I think a lot of it is because of the technology that we thought would make our lives easier, and yet you're finding that it's making your life more difficult. There's a piece in the New York Times recently about technology in the bedroom and the fact that wives and husbands have smartphones and tablets now that they bring into the bed with them, and they're constantly getting messages and tweets and texts and things like that. And it's actually hurting relationships because people aren't sitting and talking to each other because they're too busy with their electronic gizmos.
It's hurting relationships outside the bedroom as well. It's hurting relationships between friends. It's hurting relationships between family members. And it's even hurting relationships between people who do business because there's such a crush of work and communication happening. It's I just call it the noisy world syndrome. And for people that are trying to promote an idea, for musicians trying to get their records played on radio, for press release people, for people trying to get news out there, for people trying to have a party and invite their friends over, whatever it is, I'm finding that people are so stressed out and so busy and stressed, that things aren't getting done properly. People don't remember what they promise. People are making promises hoping they'll go away, or they mean it when they say it, and then they never get around to it. They keep putting it at the bottom of the pile, and the pile keeps getting bigger. And all of a sudden they go, well, geez, it's been 2 weeks since I promised it. Maybe they forgot I won't do anything about it.
Well, people expect immediate answers now. You know, I was talking to a real estate agent the other night at dinner, and she was saying, yeah, you know, people ask me questions, and they want an answer now. And if I don't give it to them now, they turn the page and they go to somebody else, or they think they're not important to me, and they don't like me anymore. I mean, it's just amazing how, you know, we demand quick answers, and a lot of times it there are no quick answers out there.
Well, the phrase, let me think about it, let me sleep on it.
Oh, forget that. See, Michael, I found a way, though, to cut through all of that, and what you do is you have a Facebook or Instagram or something like that. You find a woman with a very large posterior, and you put a picture of her on that page, and everybody will turn to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's actually what you're just saying is actually a technique that's used in popular culture. Do you remember when we were, I hate saying that, but, you know, we've talked about that when we were in our 20s and pop music was about love and romance and war and peace and issues. You know what it's about now? It's about your booty. It's about shake your booty. Hey, a rising pop star, she's got a world-famous booty. On that note, my boot heels are going to walk out of here. Richard,
you'd be wondering. Yeah.
My boot heels will be walking. Thank you so much for joining us. Richard Neer, ladies and gentlemen, our senior correspondent. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our esteemed producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of this enterprise. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, I'm your friendly announcer, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.